You're also a film coach, am I right?
I am. I kind of got thrown into that one.
can you talk about that? What is a film coach do? We have sports coach, we have life coach, we have business coach. What's a film coach doing? What's your journey been like?
My journey as a film coach has overall been able to boost the confidence of independent filmmakers. Because we just talked about those challenges, right? Like, you have challenges of funding and how do I feed my cast and what should my next move be? And, you know, do I have a sound on set or do I have, you know, my director be my DP? And so my coaching is to try to figure out how to boost your confidence, let you breathe it through. It's going to be okay. You know, you're going to get the project shot regardless, but also creative ways on how to, you know, navigate those challenges, you know, how to show up and still feel confident about producing when we are faced with so many challenges in the indie world.
Welcome to Josiah's Voice. This podcast connects you with both new storytellers and seasoned pros in Black cinema. Plus, I share my own creative journey along the way. Here's to elevating the culture. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Josiah's Voice on Black Filmmaking. This is your host, Josiah, and I'm here with Michelle A. Daniel to talk all things executive producing. Today, we've got major tips across many forms, but stages of, you know, development, production, pre-production, post, etc. She's known as the Film Plug at Showrun Her on Instagram and social media. And I don't know, I just stumbled upon her one time, as one does in the film space, just connecting with different people. And she's just got a lot of gems and knowledge to share based on her experience. And I'm very grateful that she agreed to sit down with me to talk about her experience and share it with you all. So if you're really trying to bone up on your executive producing, understanding the behind the scenes of relationships and, you know, funding your film, etc., I think this is the episode for you, so please help me welcome Michelle A. Daniel. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited. Thank you for having me in this space and also providing this space for filmmakers. It's like super amazing. I'm super geeked.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for being on. It's good to talk to you. We're chatting with her from Vegas, guys, so this ought to be fun. This portion does not have to stay in Vegas. So listen wherever you want. Okay, you know the adage, whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, except for the gems she wanted to share today. So this will be good. I think I just started to get into it, but before we launch in, could you repeat the socials that I was sharing? Where can people find you on social media, Michelle?
I am everywhere at Showrun Her. That's my handle. So Showrunher, any platform, I am there by Showrunner.
Awesome. And from there, guys, her link tree is there, her blogs are there, her portfolio, webinars, etc. Everything you need to know will be there. So please follow her because I think you're going to love what we hear and you're going to want to get connected. So with that, how did you, Michelle, become the Film Plug?
Oh my God. I think it was a name that like, it was kind of like given to me. And I think that's the fun part about like nicknames and things like that. Like it's been given to you. I remember working a few years ago and everyone would call and say, hey, like, do you have a location or do you have a director? Or do you know how to get this script done? Or can you look at my script? And pretty much after every phone call, they'd be like, oh my God, thank you so much for being resourceful. And I was like, I am a ball of resources. And so I was like, let me find a cool name. And so I remember talking to my mom about it. I was like, hey, Mom, I think I'm going to be the plug. She was like, a drug dealer? I was like, oh, Mom.
That's hilarious.
A film plug. And I was like, I have the connect. And so I kind of stuck with that. And it's been... Super fun just to kind of even just play with it, because a lot of people come on and be like, yo, you are the plug for real. And it's just about being, just giving those resources to the community, to the filmmaking community. And so I pride myself in doing research all day because I do filmmaking. This is my full-time job. So every day is about researching. Every day is how to get better as an independent filmmaker. And so when I stumble across things and find things, I'm like, oh, I got to share this. Oh, I got to share this. And just constantly wanting to be in a space where I know enough to give back and also be able to put into my own projects. So the resources just came from being the plug.
That's awesome. You remind me of Jasmine Johnson from The Black Filmmaker. Following her page, like, she's always sharing, there's a grant for this, these shows are coming out next, et cetera, and you and so many others remind me of that, and also, like, instill in me the reminder that, like, we can share the resources. Yeah. It's okay if I or you don't have all the answers, because someone else in the film collective, you know, the enthusiasm and desire to know more, that's what kind of creates or causes these answers to materialize. And so one of my favorite things is also what you do of just, if I stumble across something, you know, to just share it out on Twitter or Instagram, and whoever it's for, it's for. And I just hope it helps somebody. So I appreciate that attitude.
Yeah, because also, like, I run into a lot of independent filmmakers that are usually surprised at the information that I share. And the feedback usually is, well, you know, this is not common for people to share information. And I think the more we get into this filmmaking space, we have to learn that it's an abundance. And just like you said, so many other people are sharing content, and we can connect with our audience in different ways. It's okay to have a cross audience. It's okay for people to follow me and other independent filmmakers, because the goal is for us to relay this information to them and for them to be better at whatever they're doing. And so if they got to get a little bit from me, a little bit from someone else, and make it all happen, that is the point. And we should share, and we should give the knowledge and the things that we personally know, because if we don't share, we're just like keeping it inside. And a lot of people have, you know, unfortunately died with all of this information that they could have help someone else. And so I just love just being that, you know, the plug, and also following other independent filmmakers that are giving out information and are not afraid to give it out, because a lot of independent, they need this. A lot of people sometimes are not as good with researching. Sometimes a lot of people don't have time to research. Sometimes people just need, you know, a little nudge of, this is where you need to go. And if our goal is to support and give back to the indie community, we should be doing that freely. And I feel like knowledge, like, especially in our community, should just be free, especially if we know it, you know?
Absolutely. That's what I love about, you know, TikTok, Instagram. There's just this creative push in how to share resources and homework like this. And it just seems like more information is coming out more and more all the time, to the point that I almost feel overwhelmed sometimes, but maybe that's a good problem to have as a storyteller, you know?
Yeah, it can be very overwhelming. You just got to pick what you know, what works for you, and what, you know, what you need at that time, and save the rest for later for when you need it again. But even as a content, you know, as a creator of giving out the information, I try to have a variety, because you never know what your audience is really looking for at different times. Because I've posted, you know, information about pitch deck, and they're like, oh my God, right on time. And then I posted information about screenplays. So I try to just give a little bit of everything, so you can kind of just even get that creativity flowing, you know, seeing this type of posts and feeds, you know, in your social posts, in your feed, it inspires you. It says, you know what, maybe I haven't been doing, you know, putting in much time, but seeing someone post about it is inspiring. It allows you to say, let me get in my creative space. Let me do this. You know, I have a lot of people that come to me and say, you know, I filled out my first grant because of you. And I'm like, yes. It inspires, you know, and you move people and you plant those little seeds that even if they don't grow today, they eventually will. And so that's, if that, like when it comes to my personal brand, that is my goal, is to plant the seeds and give out the information for people to use now or later.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And guys, you can also follow all of this, not just on Michelle's Instagram, but I referenced it earlier. She does have a website, a blog with various tabs devoted to different resources, different research. What's the name of your website?
It's, you can go to showrunner.com and it will connect you to my blog.
There you go. So guys, check that out, okay? You also have a newsletter, isn't that right?
Yeah, so I just switched the blog over to the newsletter, and I love it because it's, Substack allows you to make posts and just automatically send it out to your users, and also have podcasts, and it's so interactive because the community can leave questions and network with other filmmakers. And so I recently just transitioned there, and I am absolutely loving it.
Congratulations. That's awesome. So guys, you can check that out there. So we're talking about producing today. Can you describe your role as an executive producer? For example, is there a difference between an executive producer and a producer?
Yeah, so the main difference is money. Executive producers either finance the films or find the funding to get the film financed. Right, so we pay everybody, including the producer, and the producers usually come on board to make sure a lot of the creative things are done in the project. In the independent world, executive producers slash producers kind of go hand in hand because of budget. And so you find yourself not only funding the films or finding financing to fund the films, but you're also in the day-to-day activities more, and you're kind of doing the producer work of maybe call sheets and a lot of things that EPs at major networks don't do. And so the main goal, you know, the main difference between an executive producer and a producer is the funding, how to get this project funded, how to get this project through distribution and done. And so that's the executive producer's thought process, business all day, every day.
Okay. What's one reward or two, one reward or challenge producing in the indie space, because that's definitely, as I understand it, where you thrive or where you've really contributed.
The biggest challenge is funding. You know, okay. when I work with a lot of independent filmmakers and get scripts and hear ideas and even actors, like a lot of that cannot be to its full potential because of the finances, you know. Yeah. A lot of screenwriters wish that they can do this full time. A lot of executive producers wish that they could do this full time. But how do you, you know, fund a $500,000 project, you know, one or two a year? And so the biggest challenge is not that the indie world does not have the stories to tell. It's not that we don't have the creativity. It's just that we don't have the funding to be able to pump into our projects so that we don't feel bad about not paying our crew and our cast, so that we do feel good about getting the project done and we don't have to, you know, dumb down our script or dumb down, you know, only have a few roles or crossover roles because of the funding piece. And so these are like the major challenges that we have as executive producers, that we have in the indie world, that also can affect the quality of our project. You know, if I wanted to blow up a car and I just don't have the funding to do that, I have to figure out an alternative. And then that sometimes really takes away from the script, the story. And then you're kind of left feeling like, oh, I'm in this funk of I need money. And so, you know, a lot of filmmakers have taken out personal loans and, you know, we do guerrilla style and we just try to give it our best with what we have, working with what we have. But the main challenge is funding. You know, I wish it was a real like place where you can just go and get a check, you know? Yeah. And so I love, I like sometimes it just, I'm like, oh my God, I get these scripts and they are phenomenal, but they may cost a million or two to produce. And I'm like, I don't have a way to get you $2 million. I wish I did. And it can sometimes make the, you know, indie world feel like, well, what do I do now with my career? Because you have to be able to produce it to say, this is what you're doing, a proof of concept. And so, you know, you struggle with, is this for me? How do I get this funded? Or even doing one project every couple of years, because you're either trying to save the money, get the money for the project. And so that's the real challenge. Like, I wish it really was a place where a lot of these scripts could be funded, like for real, not just, you know, a couple thousand here, a couple thousand here, but whatever is needed to actually produce this, it would be given. So that's the challenge. And I think that's the biggest challenge, because, you know, once you have the funds, you can hire the roles that you need. You can pay your actors that, you know, they're not trying to work a full-time job and show up for your script. And, you know, they're tired and all of these things that really contribute to the quality of your script. And so, you know, I don't know the 100% answer to, you know, getting the entire $2 million, but, you know, I try to tell people, if you have a couple thousand, just still shoot it, you know, work with what you have and get the project done. And, you know, as you continue to do more projects, money will come in, you know, you're able to find crowdfunding and different things that will allow you to pick up, you know, more money to actually be able to produce your films. So that's the biggest challenge, because I feel like any indie filmmaker that I have cut a check to or has found funding is like, okay, well, I'm good to go now.
Yeah.
So no, that is the biggest challenge that we have. And I really wish Hollywood can jump in and help us, because it's a gap. It's a gap between Hollywood and independent filmmaking. And I really wish they just would cross over and say, oh, I see it. And here I am.
Yeah. Because before we jump into the rewards and the pros of the indie space, I was talking to a buddy this week, and we were just remembering like how expensive filmmaking is, even down to something like, you know, who you might cast, which that might be one of the most recognizable aspects, even to the film nerd or to the layman, you know, who isn't in the industry. They just, they're a film buff. But they seem to understand that, you know, it Will Smith costs this much, you know, or Viola Davis costs, you know, people's value and whatnot, their legacy, the pull that they bring. But it even trickles down into other things like, what about your composer? What are they worth? Visual effects, if there are any. Location. And of course, marketing. Like a lot, I remember I didn't, when I was so much younger, I didn't know that billboards and commercials and billboards and commercials maybe overseas, you know, if we're talking about, you know, the United States, we're talking about the Hollywood model, there's a budget for that as well that goes into. So how much did Transformers cost? How much did Black Panther? You don't think about that.
No, you don't. And just, you know, bare minimum, making sure you can feed everybody on set. You know, you're talking about 10 to 15 people if you have a skeleton crew. And, you know, if you're there 12 hours, that's breakfast and lunch, you know, and snack. And you're like, oh my God, like I just need, if anything, I just need food money, you know? And if it's 7 to 10 days, just food alone starts to increase the cost. And you're just like, wow. And like you say, it's those small things that you don't think of. It's a lot of independent filmmakers that are moving into the distribution phase of being on places like Tubi, and they need closed caption. They need just the small things that you have not included on your budget that you didn't think of, you know, and all of it starts to add up, and you're, before you know it, you're like, I have spent all my money on this film.
Where'd the budget go? No, you're right. Yes. The basic things of food or affording parking, if that's involved, or to like put up a family in a hotel or something. If you've been able to rent their home for, you know, a location, you know, just all these things that you don't think about that are a challenge in the mainstream Hollywood model. So you know they're definitely a challenge in the indie space, and it's worthwhile to have information to make the most informed decisions for your crew and for your project.
That's right. Yep.
So you're also a film coach, am I right?
I am. I kind of got thrown into that one.
can you talk about that? What is a film coach do? We have sports coach, we have life coach, we have business coach. What's a film coach doing? What's your journey been like?
My journey as a film coach has overall been able to boost the confidence of independent filmmakers. Because we just talked about those challenges, right? Like, you have challenges of funding and how do I feed my cast and what should my next move be? And, you know, do I have a sound on set or do I have, you know, my director be my DP? And so my coaching is to try to figure out how to boost your confidence, let you breathe it through. It's going to be okay. You know, you're going to get the project shot regardless, but also creative ways on how to, you know, navigate those challenges, you know, how to show up and still feel confident about producing when we are faced with so many challenges in the indie world, from finding actors, from, you know, having to film on the weekends versus the weekdays because people are only available during that time. And so I really want to show you that, A, every story that's inside of you is so valuable and it needs to be told. And you have an audience that is waiting for you to tell that story. So let's get out of, you know, let's try to figure out the challenges that you are faced with and let's figure out how to navigate through that. Because the one thing that I want people to really understand is that you have an audience. Your story, your perspective is so important and it can definitely impact and change the life of someone. And you don't want, you know, all of these challenges to be the reason why you don't tell your story. So overall, just boosting up that confidence and showing independent filmmakers how to navigate, you know, through the funding challenges, through the acting challenges, even through the producing challenges. You know, when I first started off early as a film producer, I was just doing all kind of stuff that I look back and be like, whoa, I cannot believe my cast is going for that. And so just kind of like even learning as a producer how to show up on set, what things really matter, because one of the things that I really preach in my film coaching is that although we're here because we love this project, we love this career, we want to make good films that matter, but it's also about the experience that you have making these films with the people you're making them with. That is what matters the most, having fun making these films and also coming to a common ground where everyone is respecting everybody's creativity. And it's taken me a long time to get there as a producer, because when I first started, I was like, oh my God, I'm an EP, is my way. This is my show. I know how I want this done. And this is how it's going to get done. And then over time, you realize that, okay, I have to step back as an executive producer. I've hired these talented people to tell these talented stories. They are just as passionate about filmmaking as I am. My director, my DPs, my PAs, whoever is on my set, they have a passion for filmmaking. And you have to allow your team to actually do their job. You know, I hired you because you was good, but then I'm like, well, we can't do that. And you can't do that. So coaching also is about showing executive producers how to show up, you know, with their team and how to have a good experience and how to make sure your team feels like they were able to bring their best selves and also, you know, do their creativity in on these productions. And that's the best thing about indie filmmaking. A pro about indie filmmaking in Hollywood is that you're able to just be as creative and tell the stories that you want to tell. And so as independent producers, we have to give that space. You know, this is not Hollywood where it has to be no, no, yes, yes, this, this, but allow that creativity to be, allow your director to really, you know, get in and do something different with the shot and step outside of the box. And that is the pro of independent filmmaking. We're able to tell our stories the way we want to, whether it's through our script, through our directing, through our DPing. And so that is so important. And so just coaching, you know, these independent filmmakers and be like, okay, breathe. Like, it's going to be okay. We're just making movies. Yeah. That's it.
Awesome. I love that. With that, guys, we're about to dive into some other deep stuff here. So stick around. We're going to be back with Michelle Daniel right after this.
This episode of Josiah's Voice podcast is brought to you by Newsly. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural, smooth human voice. It won't be my voice, but no app is perfect, but this one's pretty close. Because for the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. Browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. You can follow any topic as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin, or pop culture and movies. It will find you the latest articles and read them to you aloud. And they have podcasts as well, exploring trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Like this one. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me. That's www.newsly.me. Or from the link in the description. And use my promo code, Josiah Voice. J-O-S-I-A-H, Voice. I'll put that in the description for you. When you click it, you'll receive a 1 month free premium subscription to Newsly. Stop scrolling. Start listening with Newsly.
All right, welcome back, guys. We're with Michelle A. Daniel, the film plug, show run her. So, Michelle, we got a lot of film tips coming up. Give us a film tip. How do we identify a strong script?
That's so hard because sometimes I feel like you like kind of just know, like if you start to read a script, you like, you feel it, you're like, oh, this is getting good. And usually, in my opinion, that comes from being connected with the script, the characters immediately. And I try to tell people to, you know, sometimes we do our scene heading and we're like interior house, but no, put your reader into interior Michelle's house. You know, you want them to feel where they are. You want them to start to get a visual of the character, where they live, their personality, who they are. And so when I see scripts like that, that allow me to instantly connect to locations, instantly connect to where the characters are specifically, I'm like, oh my God, I'm in Michelle's house. Let's go. Yeah. So that allows me to start to have a real connection to the storyline. And it's something about making it very relatable. You know, what is relatable to the person that is reading it, and how is this going to be relatable to the audience? Is this story really creating impact, or are you just telling a story because, you know, you just got a cool idea? Mm-hmm. A lot of good stories create and build an impact into their story, and you can see it happening in the script. You can see, you know, I'm starting to, you know, question, you know, who I am as a person, or yeah, I love that, or yes, I do that, or I've never thought about it like that. And so I know it's kind of cliche to say you kind of just know, but you know, the first two pages, I'm like, oh my God, this is getting good. Like, I'm already loving the characters. I'm already feeling like they are bringing value to me in my life, and they are presenting me with something that I never thought about. And so even when it comes down to the script writing, I try to tell people, you know, put yourself in those characters' houses. Say, you know, I do read scripts and I don't know why anymore, like all caps the character's name and different, a small little mini description of them in the script. But those things matter because we're creatives and we're visual. Yeah. And so if you can get your reader to visualize this character, they are already starting to feel connected to them and their voice. So, you know, you kind of just know, but you get this bubbly feeling like, oh, this is about to get good.
Yeah. No, that's great. And again, guys, we're asking from the standpoint of a producer, of the executive producer in these spaces, okay? A follow-up to that, can you weigh in on a tip for, there are, I think, some hard and fast rules when it comes to the feature script, especially lengthwise. So I wanted to ask about that. Maybe for a short film, would you have a tip for screenwriters as it comes to the short film? Like, should it be 5 minutes? Should it be 45 minutes? Any tip there?
Yeah, like as an EP, my preference is anywhere between the 7 to 12 pages, especially in the independent world. And for a few reasons. One, budget. You know, once we started to go into a 40 page short film, we're almost inching to a feature here, and that is going to cost, you know, more money. The thing that I love about a 7 to 12 page script or something that can be shot in 7 days or less is that you're able to even rent out quality equipment for the week. You know, a lot of short films that may take, you know, 12 and 15 days to shoot may kind of start to struggle budget-wise with equipment and the cost of that, and being able to afford an Arri camera versus, you know, a Canon camera. And not to say nothing is wrong with neither one, but when we're talking about the quality in the short film festival market, even with negotiating contracts to get your short film on HBO and a lot of these networks, quality is super important. The type of camera, the type of equipment that you're using is super important. So I always try to say a 7 to 12 page script is phenomenal. Like, I can produce that, I can fund that, I can get that done in a week and make sure that we have quality equipment. The only thing that I realized that a lot of screenwriters sometimes struggle with is how to tell that story in 7 to 12 pages. And I'm not a short film writer because I talk too much. And like, I love, that's why I write TV series, because I got to like keep this thing going and going and going.
Yeah, no, for sure.
If you can tell a story in seven minutes, you have done something very phenomenal. So
tell me.
I don't always feel like it takes 40 minutes for a short film story to be told. I feel like let's take out what's super important. Let's take out the meat of that and condense it. And remembering that short films can also be like a business card to the bigger picture, or to the feature film. So you want to just tell that story, what's important, how to get the audience hooked, and be like, man, I would love to have this, to see how this would play out in a feature film. But anything under 12 pages is fairly easy to shoot funding wise. And so that's why I always tell new filmmakers, start off with a short film, make it very short. You will be able to afford it. And, you know, you'll have a couple of days of, oh my God, what was that? You know, right?
Yeah.
Instead of like a 15-day production as a new filmmaker, you're feeling like, this is too much for me. But always start small, and just make sure that that story is right on point. You want to get in, you know, the strong parts. It's not here to keep the audience, it's here to hook the audience. So short films usually are like my favorite to produce. The quality can be at its max, because it takes less days to actually get it shot.
That's awesome. Would you also have a tip for anyone who wrote a web series or a feature length script?
Yes, like I love web series, TV series. They're my favorite. I think TV series is the best way to build an audience as an independent filmmaker. Sometimes we write, you know, all of them have their pros and cons. So I also always say, you know, do each of them and figure out what your feel is, figure out how that works for you. I started off in the TV series space, and I was actually able to build 4 seasons of that TV series called Between Women. And it allowed me to build an audience. It allowed me to, over the course of the 10 years, have an audience that supported me and my work. And although I ventured off into short films and other things, especially in this film space, as an independent filmmaker, you do need an audience. You do need an audience that every time you drop something, every time you promote something, every time you put up a crowdfunding page, that they are there to support. And TV series are the easiest way to build an audience and keep everyone connected, to keep your name rotating throughout every week. Oh my God, where is season two? Where is the next episode? It keeps people very, like, really intrigued with who you are and how you're producing your content. Versus like the feature film world, you know, sometimes we watch features and we're just done with them. We're just like, okay, that was super good. And not to say that, you know, you should not venture off into feature world, because as of right now for independent filmmakers, features are being able to be monetized. You know, you look at Tubi, where it's the number one source for feature films and independent filmmakers, and you can really monetize on that platform and make money to become a full-time filmmaker. And so all of them have their pros and cons. I always say short films are good for new independent filmmakers, filmmakers that want to get into the festival world and get their name out there and really network. TV series are really good to build audience, so that with any campaigns or things that you may have coming up, over the few years in this course, you're able to really keep your name out there. And feature films are really good right now to be able to monetize on different platforms with different, you know, networks. And so if you can do a little bit of them all, you're really onto something. So they all have really good pros. It really comes down to what you feel like you're strong at. Mm-hmm. Like, I love TV series. I'm like, give me a series any day. I love it. I love reading the comments every week about, oh my God, what's next and what's going to happen and what about this character? Just really getting people involved, I feel like, is so, like, it's just super fun to me. I know, if you don't remember, when Scandal had us in a chokehold.
Oh, right. Like, yeah. Black Twitter was, or Insecure, or,
Yes.
Every week.
I was like, oh my God. And we talked about it and we, you know, we tweeted about it. And this is what actually allowed people to learn more about who Shonda Rhimes were, you know, who Issa Rae is. Like, you get to, as a producer, as a writer, as a director, have your name floating through, you know, the social world more than, you know, once you do a feature, people are like, okay, that was super cool and cute. And I love that. And what's next, you know?
Awesome. Thank you for that. Okay. What's one tip as an executive producer that you would give to actors, maybe to find what casting?
A tip to actors. My tip to actors is to just be very authentic. You know, I've had a lot of castings where, which I don't mind, you know, a lot of props and things are used, and it's really taken me away from your, like, who you are as an actor. Like, I want to see you deliver your message. I understand, you know, setting up the room, and we're going to get there once we get to set. Trust me, we're going to have props and everything for you.
Right.
But really bring who you are to the table and let the focus be you, because that is what your casting video is for. Is it to be 100% about you? And so I love when actors are very authentic, and when they just come and it's just, you know, the white wall and just them, because I have nothing else to focus on but you. Sometimes I was looking at a casting and they, like, brought the instrument in. I was like, oh, that's a cool saxophone. Like, I get real distracted. Like, okay, let me go back and play this over again. But a lot of, sometimes executive producers and casting directors don't go back and play it again. You know, they were distracted and they're like, okay, moving on to the next. And so just remembering that this audition is 100% about you, and it is time for you to bring that ego, bring that confidence to, you know, the actual video and be your authentic self. So that would be my tip for them. Because I know I could just start looking at everything. I'm like, oh, look at the flowers on the wall and look at the chair. And I'm like, okay, let me replay this audition again.
Because if you're not careful, I guess it turned into an audition for set deck or for props when it's, you know, the actor's audition, like we're casting. So I totally feel that. That's a great tip. What's your one tip for location scouting?
Bring your director with you. When location scouting, the director should be there and should be involved. You know, sometimes a lot of executive producers who, you know, in indie world may be the location scout. Or if you have a location scout, you know, they find a location that actually fits into their budget. So they're like, this is the location. This is all we can afford. This is it. Yeah. But also the director really needs to have input into that because they are the ones that are telling the stories with the actors. They're trying to really bring this to life. And so if they need to come to the location so they can say, you know what, this will work. Like, I feel where these characters would be. This is Michelle's home. And so my location, scouting location tip is to always include the director, even on an indie budget. You know, give them a few options to pick out of. If you only have a certain amount of money, find a few locations within that and let them pick out of one of those locations. But never just be like, this is the final location, this is it, this is all we can afford. And then your director just shows up the day of and like, whoa, okay, this is not what I had in mind. So my location tip is to always make sure that your director is aligned with your location as well. And bring them and let them be a part of that process as well, because they're going to be the ones that is going to tell that story in that location. And you want them to feel comfortable with that location and with trying to connect that character to that actual location.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Crafty and catering for your indie project. What's your one tip?
Oh my God. If you cannot get pizza, don't. Listen, I've had my pizza days. I've done pizza probably like my entire first year of filming.
Yeah. I've been there too.
Because it's super cheap. Yeah. But also you can figure out creative ways to fuel your crew and your cast. And I don't just not recommend pizza just because it's pizza, but also when you're on a 12-hour set, you want to be providing healthy items that can actually fuel your cast and crew, water. You don't want them to feel sluggish with all of the cheese and the baked goods. So sometimes you realize like a nice light sandwich or pasta or, you know, may just do it, you know? So I always try to, my tip for crafty is to give your cast and crew food items that they can use that will keep them pumped up, that is good, granola bars and fruit. These type of things allow the creativity to stay there for them not to feel like, oh my God, I just had mozzarella sticks and wings and now I'm ready to go home. I need a nap. But you want to fuel them. So if you can, try to stay away from junk foods, you know, the candy, the chocolate, the sweets, and incorporate the water and the granola bar and the fruits. And this will keep them fueled and will keep their minds going where they're not on this sugar high and then collapse 5 hours in. You're like, well, what happened? Well, you know, I just had two Snicker bars and a Twix. I'm super tired. So if you can, always go the route of high nutrition. I know it can kind of be costly sometimes, but if you can, that's the best way to fuel them. And I remember in my indie days and still to this day, like I call smoothie shops in different places and I'm like, hey, would you like to donate to our set for breakfast? And sometimes they're like, sure, seven smoothies. And I will go and pick up seven smoothies and bring them to set. You know, sometimes a lot of people feel like they have to pay a lot of money for crafty, but it's a lot of businesses out here that, especially if you have a small crew, they will donate, you know, seven or eight smoothies to your cast and your crew to film. They may want a little credit and that's fine, But you have fueled your cast with something that feels good. They feel refreshed. So I always try to tell people, just invest a little bit more in your crafty, or switch it up on, you know, what items you decide to give out to your cast and your crew.
That's great. Yeah, because guys, we're not trying to give anyone the itis. Like you were saying, big foods that make you drowsy or sluggish. Like, we're not trying to do that. I once heard Janine Daniels, a filmmaker I admire, say, guys, we don't do struggle food.
Yes.
Not too much junk food, like certain restaurants. Well, I won't name nobody. But like, I love, thank you, Michelle, the emphasis on fuel. That's the reason we're here, to make the project. This isn't, you know, a meetup or a kickback at the rest, yep, you know, our favorite restaurant or bar or anything. You can do that if you have energy after, yep, filming.
Afterwards, yep.
But you do, thank you for the emphasis on fueling, yep, everyone involved. That is so key. Demystify film grants. What tip would you have for securing the financing?
I preach all day, every day, a pitch deck. You know, a lot of filmmakers I've noticed don't have much knowledge of what a pitch deck is. And so a pitch deck is usually, when you go and file, okay, so let's back up. So grants are unrestricted funds from organizations and companies that, they want to contribute to the artist, to the film world. They've received some funding and they want to say, hey, we have $30,000 to give to a filmmaker to be able to produce their content. And so along with that, they do require a lot of different documents. It almost feels like you're giving them your entire soul. You're like, okay, right, wait a minute. And it can be challenging because you're like, okay, do I really need this $30,000? Because y'all are requesting like 50 items from me.
Yeah.
But they are so important, and grants are real. They exist. They do give them out to independent filmmakers. It just takes you putting in the effort to get all of that necessary paperwork together. You know, a couple of weeks of getting the paper together for $30,000 definitely seems like a winner. And so a pitch deck is usually when you're filling out some of the documents, they ask for a log line, a synopsis, your key creatives. And so what that is, it's just kind of saying, can you put this into a bunch of slides for us to be able to review? The reason why I recommend pitch decks versus having everything on an individual page is, one, it looks good, you know, especially you're able to add visuals and add important things to your pitch deck that you may can't do on a regular Google Doc. And also your pitch deck is used for production companies and networks and sales agents. You know, I tell a lot of independent filmmakers, please don't send your scripts. Just, you know, I get a lot of scripts in my email and people are sending their scripts, and I get it. You want you're trying to figure out who can actually produce your script or help you. But also, you know, have to understand that you're sending your script to people you don't know. You know, you don't know if they have the best interest in mind of your script. And also when you're sending it too off to networks, you know, it's a legal battle where networks don't even look at scripts because, you know, 5 years down from the line, they don't want you to say, oh, I think that was my idea that was stolen because I sent it over to this network.
Yeah.
And so pitch decks are a nice way to be able to hook producers, to hook networks without giving them your script, without giving them all of what this story entails. But it allows them to say, you know what, I'm kind of interested in this story. Like, I love the log line. The synopsis feels really good. They have some really good characters that they are identifying with this script. Let me contact them and see if I can read the script. And so the key to funding and also elevating your project to the next level does come with a pitch deck. If you can get you a nice pitch deck done, it's an investment. And you just need it done that one time. And that is what you're constantly sending off to networks and producers and production companies until you get a bite, until they say, you know what, can I see your script? Because I really loved your pitch deck and I'm really interested in this story. And you want that from them. You just don't want to send your script somewhere and nobody ever gets back to you. You're just like, well, did they like it? Did they read it? Like, what happened? And now your script is just in someone's email. And sometimes a lot of producers and networks just don't have the time to read, especially we talked about feature films, a 90-page script, you know, especially if they're getting 4 and 5 a day. And so you're getting lost. And so my goal is to always tell people, get you a pitch deck, stand out, make it quality, a few slides where you can interest somebody and they're like, oh my God, I'm kind of digging this. Like, I love the pitch deck. I love the colors. They got everything lined out. Yeah. It's the easiest way to elevate yourself and get set up actually for a meeting about your script.
Is there a difference between the pitch deck and the show Bible?
Yes. So a pitch deck usually consists of your log line, your synopsis, your talent. And I also like to include key creatives, which is a people above the line. If they are impactful, if they have, you know, a lot of awards or they have, you know, they work at a major network, it's super cool to include key creatives into your pitch deck. It also allows you to, if you're doing a feature, lay out your synopsis and your arc of your story. If you're doing a TV series, it allows you to say, okay, this is what will happen in each season, the pilot episode or the finale. You're giving them kind of more details in the pitch deck. The Bible is way, it's details about the character, about the show. You know, you may have 2 pages in a Bible that describes just one character, you know? So you're able to really get a character description and get a more detailed outline of what the show is. So the Bible can, I've seen Bibles like 50 pages. I'm like, whoa.
Me too.
And they're good. They really are. If you get to the TV Bible conversation, trust me, a network is super invested into whatever you have going on.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah, because I've read like the Wire show Bible. I think that was pretty extensive. And then some can be very brief. Like I think the Stranger Things one was like maybe 20 pages or something.
Yes.
It's all in, you know, whatever's being developed at the time or whatever. So thank you for that.
Yeah, like pitch decks and TV Bibles are very subjective. You know, it's very, like I try to tell people, include what's important. Like, how do you feel about your pitch deck? How do you feel about your, you know, TV Bible? Is it, you know, some stories, you know, like Grey's Anatomy, which has a huge TV Bible, they need that, you know, they have a lot going on into the TV series. And like you say, Stranger Things may be condensed more. And so it's really no right or wrong to how many pages. The point is to make sure every word counts, every sentence matters, every description of the characters in the show. That is the most important part when it comes down to doing TV Bibles. When you do pitch decks, I try to tell people, you know, condense it as much as possible. You don't want a 20-page, you know, presentation where the reader is like, oh my God, this is going to take me all day. But again, it's just about hooking them, right? Like getting them into like, oh my God, I kind of really like this idea. So you don't have to give a 5-page synopsis versus just a few pages of, you know, like 1 page of what this looks like. And so that's the difference. Also, a TV Bible helps you in that writer's room when you have a bunch of writers that are involved and you are... When I see a TV Bible, I'm like, oh, you a writer. Like, you're
that.
A screenwriter.
And guys, don't be intimidated. That's great, Michelle. But also don't be intimidated, guys, because one story I like from Insecure, if I'm remembering correctly, was at the time, I don't think Melanie Masukas had made a pitch deck for a television show. And okay. I think she and Issa Rae like to joke about it in the early development. But Melanie just had a challenge or two. But then when she figured it out, I saw some slides. A little bit of it might even be in the documentary for the show or somewhere. I can't remember where I saw it. But this is a beautiful pitch deck. And it's one I'm like, I was talking to some friends when I worked on that show. We were like, man, I wish we could find her pitch deck, man. Like, because you can get scripts online and things like that. Show Bibles. I was like, if there's one pitch deck I'd love to read, it'd be Melanie Matsoukas' Insecure pitch deck. Because the story behind that and the few screen grabs I saw, I was like, wow, this is so exciting.
It's exciting, and pitch decks, like, they're just visually, you can, I'm not like a book reader. I'm like, okay, this is just too much. But you give me some visuals and hands-on experience, I am there. And sometimes, you truly connect to your audience and the production companies by them seeing those visuals. They actually feel like they can piece together a movie. Like, oh yeah, like this is looking super cool, before they even get into the read. And so I love pitch decks. They're so much fun. And I just recommend, I try to preach, like, have a pitch deck for everything that you have written. It will get you a sales agent, it will get you a production company interested in actually producing your content or your script. And so pitch decks are so vital, and I'm so glad that more people are learning about them, just from not my platform, but from other platforms, because they're so essential and they are the key, to actually elevating your film career. They really are.
And use whatever background you have, or if you're new to it, it's okay. Because, again, in the case of Melanie Matsoukas, at the time she hadn't done it, but as we all know, she's got that strong background in music videos. And in the interview, I heard that was what like really propelled her when the pieces came together. Just all her prowess and creativity from that visual language. She blew it out of the water, apparently. So if you got art background, comic book, whatever, thank you, Michelle, for like highlighting. Just remember, it's visual as well. You're
It's
trying to
visual.
just, yeah. So thank
And
you.
every image matters. I actually was teaching a workshop the other day, and a lot of filmmakers, because pitch decks cost money. Here we go, back to the money thing.
Back to the money.
Everything. Everything is expensive. But I was talking to them the other day, and I'm like, okay, listen, even if you do not have the money to afford someone to actually do your pitch deck, get it done. You can't win if you're not in. If you gotta slap that boy in the Google Doc, by all means necessary, try your best to make it look good and feel good. But not being able to afford someone to actually do it should not stop you from not having one. You need one. Like you say, it's the tool to people. Like, you feel like you was like, man, I'm just blown away. Like, if I'm blown away by your pitch deck, it's no telling what this script and how we're going to be able to market this show is going to be phenomenal. So it's a clear indication of what can I really expect from you as a screenwriter, as an executive producer. Is this going to be super fun? Like, who are you? Oh, you're super dope. Like, you're really using this music, experience into this pitch deck. Wow. Like, it's amazing. And so it does also showcase a lot of personality and who you are as a creative as well.
So that's the development aspect. That's the pitch. Did I miss anything with that?
No.
Perfect. What's one pre-production tip that you'd give?
That executive producers really need to have chemistry with their directors.
Yes. Yes.
It's the main thing that will allow you to have a smooth production. If you're not aligned with your director, who is the main person who is going to be with cast and crew every day, all day, from the minute you get to set to the minute you leave set, you are not handling your production correctly. If you and your director, if the producer and the director does not have alignment, even as far as what my expectations are for set, how I want you to handle cast and crew, how I want you to speak to them, what this set involves, the money that we have to spend, you know, all of these details that directors are making. You know, I read an article the other day that said, okay, so who owns the script, the director or the producer? Because directors do a lot, you know. Yeah. Producers, yes, we get it started, but directors after that are fully engaged and involved from pretty much the development until distribution throughout the marketing. And so if you're not aligned with what that looks like for your production with your director, you're going to have a disconnect because you don't have anyone as a producer to show up for you and stick by your mission like your director will for you. I remember, you know, my director and I, we loved each other, and he would be like, look, Michelle, I don't want that. Like, he already knew, like, you know, they know, like, okay, this is the policy. This is how she kind of wants this set to be ran. And this is what I'm going to execute because these are the standards for it, because the producer is not on set all the time, you know, and I, you know, make sure there's no playing and laughing and all of y'all are shooting. It's like a big responsibility for the director. And if the director is not aligned with the producer, then your set can just kind of just go to pieces. Is because A, they're doing their own thing, one, and that is definitely not what you want, because you still need structure on your set, even though everyone is having fun. And they're able to make sure that all of the moving parts, whether it's through budget and all of these other things, they're keeping in the back of their mind. You know, if you know it's, you know, extra $300 for an extra hour at this location, your shot list may not be so extra. You may have, okay, mm-hmm. this is what I'm getting. And if I have time, I will get this. And that's alignment. You know, if you're not telling your director how much your budget is, how much money you have to spend. And I know a lot of people don't like talking about that. Then you're just going to go over anyway. They're just going to say, well, I didn't know. And that is very true. They didn't know that it costs an extra $300 to be at that location. They just know that they had a shot list and they thought you had it taken care of, you know, and that's it. Yeah. But you have to be in alignment. And I do feel like in the pre-production phase, directors need to know more about the business and what it's taking to produce, the cost that it's taking to produce, the mission, the overall goal of distribution and marketing, so that they're helping making those decisions while they're on set and throughout the rest of the phases of production.
Could you define above the line versus below the line? We talked about it very briefly early.
Yes. So above the line are the people that just make the decisions and cut the checks.
Back to the money.
Yeah, that's it. Back to the money. Yeah. Above the line are the people that's making this production happen. Like, they are responsible to getting it through distribution. And below the line are the people that come and make that happen based off of what the above the line has said, based off of the budget. And so above the line is usually business, I like to say. And then below the line is usually the creatives. They're there to get all of that visual storytelling the way we see fit in the budget.
Awesome. So like the producer, above the line, director, below the line, production assistants.
Yes.
For example,
and lighting, and cinematographer. So. Yeah. And a lot of times the above the line people are the ones that are in the development phase as well. Below the line usually doesn't come in until pre-production and actually production phases. Your above the line usually comes in the early development phase from your executive producers, line producers, associate producers. It's common to have a director come on in a development phase, especially if you're going to be doing pitch decks and you want to include them into your pitch deck. You can get a director early in the development phase. And so then you're below the line is your gaffers, your lighters, your cinematographers, and they necessarily do not have to come in until you have worked out all of those kinks in the development. Mm-hmm. A lot of time indie filmmakers are in the development phase, hiring like hair and makeup and gaffers and cinematographers. I'm like, guys, we need the script first. We need the script. Once we get the script, yes. We will know everybody that we need, you know? And sometimes, you know, pulling people on too early can also hurt your production because, you know, when you call someone about a new job and you're like, hey, like, I want you to do this direct. And you're like, they're amped, they're ready. You know, okay, yes, send me the script. And you're like, I don't have the script yet. And they can kind of lose interest. Then your actors are getting antsy and they're like debating, do I wait for your production or do I take another production? You know, they don't know how long you're going to take in your development and your screenwriting phases. So something I always tell people too is do not pull anyone from below the line on board until you are in your production, pre-production phase where your script is done and you are your pitch deck and you are ready to go. Because one thing about a cinematographer and a director, they're going to ask for the script first. You can say like, hey, I have this idea. They're like, well, send me the script. And if you don't have the script, you just really had a conversation, you know, and it's about making sure you have that script and development before you even get people on board and involved, because you don't even know who you will need. You don't know how many days your production will take. You know, you don't have the actual script to be able to break it down yet.
That's great. Good segue into, okay, now we're in production. Mm-hmm. What's your tip from a producer to filmmakers? Now you're in production.
It goes back to what I said earlier, and that's have fun. You know, development and pre-production is so stressful. You're trying to, you know, figure it all out and do script coverage and have crafty and look at locations and make sure you have permits and all of these things signed. The production is about having fun. It's about making the movie, creating that experience. This is what we all came here to do. We came here for the production. Yeah. And so my advice, regardless of, you know, how hectic things may be, is to really have a good experience, have a fun experience shooting your feature film or your TV series or your short. If you have fun shooting it, people are going to have fun watching it. You know, it shouldn't be a stressful environment where the actors are stressed and you are stressed and everybody is stressed and they're just like, I'm ready to go home, you know? Yeah. Have fun in your production. As creatives, we have that ability in this career path to bring our authentic, fun selves to the table. And this is what it's about. So no stress during production, just fun experiences. And again, if that alignment with your director and your entire team and the pre-production phases were done, this is what we're here for. Like, we're here to execute everything we did in pre-production. So have fun making the movie, make memories, have fun with your cast and your crew and take pictures and shoot your film and really come, you know, with the feeling of, man, that was a really good set. You know, yeah. The production phase, you only have a certain amount of people for a certain amount of time. You only have your actors in the production phase. So make that experience for them worthwhile as well. So have fun. Just have fun. That's why we are creatives, to have fun.
I love that because it calls to mind like rapport and like have, I've seen writer's rooms, like they had Nerf gun battles or
yes.
When I worked on a show, we played pranks, like this little cartoon character just kept showing up around set, but no one would admit who it was. Or one of the most common that we'll see is like on Instagram or sharing photos of who came to work dressed the same, but it wasn't planned.
Yes, yep.
You know? And networking, of course, even if it's just with one person who becomes your buddy or like your brother or you're like your homegirl, yes, on set. Maybe you have things in common outside of film, you know, yes, just things like that that do foster community and make it fun.
It does. It does. Like every production that I have been a part of, all of my actors, I be on Instagram, they be out and about. I'm like, okay, y'all real friends in real life, yeah, you know? And that's super cool because, you know, as we continue to work in this industry, we need each other. You need other actors. You need other directors. You need crew. You never know who you're going to work with again. So like you say, building those relationships are super fun as well. Like you have like-minded people in your circle that understand you. And that's super important.
Awesome. What's your one post-production tip?
My one post-production tip is for everyone to make sure that they have a clean final project. And when I say clean, I'll give you a story. Like right now, when I first started shooting 14 years ago, I didn't know much about copyright music. So I just like, I have Beyonce, I have Jeezy, I have everybody in my first series. And it's so interesting because I don't have those original files anymore. It was from 14 years ago. Something happened to my hard drive, unfortunately. And now I just have, you know, completed files with music that I cannot use. Like, oh my God, like Tubi is not approving Young Jeezy on my track. It's just not happening. So my post-production tip is, you know, yes, do your scoring, do all of those things for your final, but also have a clean final where it's no scoring, where it's no coloring, it's no titles, because you don't know what the next few years hold. You don't know what you will need to change. And if you have that final file only, you cannot do much with it. But if you have a clean file, at least you can add new scoring and new music underneath, and you can color correct it differently, or you can change your titles. So always have a completed one with everything there, and also have just a clean production, a clean file where you can do more to it as time evolves.
Excellent. What's your one distribution tip?
Sign the contract. Sign it. Okay.
Sign it.
Sign it. Listen, I get it. It's some horrible contracts out here. I've seen horrible contracts from major networks. And I'm like, whoa, I wasn't expecting, you know, $500 over 2 years, but okay. You know? Yeah. But, you know, I know sometimes too, as indie filmmakers, we are so connected to our art. It's our babies. We're sensitive about it, and we hold on to it. And that was me. I remember being like, nope, I need thousands of dollars for my work because I put thousands of dollars in. But sign the contract. You know, it may not be the best deal, but your goal is to get your name out there, to get audience on to view your actual project, for you to build audience, for people to learn about who you are as an independent filmmaker, as a screenwriter. So the contract may not be exactly what you want, but go ahead and sign it. As long as it's not giving over your soul, yeah. Of course. But if it can put eyes on your content, if it can, you know, help you build an audience and get your work and your name out there and get it in a press release, that is the goal. The goal is to build your career, build this resume for yourself. And you can't do it when you say, no, that contract just didn't look good. You know, it may be 60-40 and you're like, well, I want the 60. Well, you may just get the 40. And if you get the 40 and you're able to, you know, build an audience and get people to know your work and give you feedback about your work and have it on different platforms, that is also a very rewarding thing as well. Sometimes it's just not about the actual financial dollar, but it's also about how do you get yourself to the next level? How are you in these spaces on these networks when your film is next to, you know, if you're on Netflix, your film is on Netflix next to all of these other powerhouses, you know, and we can't say, well, I need more money because it's this network. Well, sometimes just the feel of having it in there and having that on your resume is just as beneficial as, you know, I know a lot of people don't want a couple hundred dollars, but, you know, that just may be what it is. And again, you're going to create more projects. You're going to create more things. And as you grow, yes, your level of what I want from finances is going to change. But when you're just starting off and you don't have much out there, just sign the contract. Sign the contract. Get your work out there. Get it streaming. Put it on your resume. And build yourself from there. You're going to have more opportunities to get it on different networks. It can also allow you a memo deal. You know, if it does good on that network, they may say, hey, do you have something else that we can actually put on here? And then now you can negotiate things. But my distribution, you know, tip is just sign the contract. You know, as long as it's not giving over your project to someone completely, Sign it and get your name out there. Don't hold on to it because you realize you're holding on to it for years, just waiting on, you know, the perfect contract, and it may never come along, unfortunately. The goal is just to get let's get people familiar with who you are and what you're doing.
That's beautiful.
And I've had really bad contracts before. Like I've had contracts that was like, you know, $200 for 3 years. I'm like, wait, where did this come and go?
Right.
But I was able to gain audience. I was able to get people to come and follow my social pages and be a part of the community so that I can network and promote more of my content to them and anything that I was doing. It was a support system for me. So also just, you know, sometimes it's not always about the dollar. Look at the bigger picture and say, how else can I win, or how can I make this beneficial for me?
Excellent. What's your one marketing tip?
My one marketing tip is to have stills and behind the scenes footage. When you are working with major networks or even just, you know, promoting on your page, you don't want like the camera phone picture, you know, you actually want to have a photo shoot that involves your actors, your crew, your talent, so that you can use that to promote. Because also when you're a part of film festivals and you're part of these major platforms, they do ask for stills and they ask for high quality stills. And so you want to have a photo shoot where you have a variety to be able to make movie poster boards and to upload to festivals. So my marketing tip is to always plan a photo shoot into your budget and get your actors and your crew there and take some nice pictures, and you will have a marketing tool to actually be able to market. You know, it's cool to pull stills from the actual project, but it's also cool to have that photo shoot, like where you can create a nice poster board for your project, and you can submit nice pictures, like you said, billboards. You know, billboards are coming back to be this popular thing now. Yeah. Have nice pictures from your photo shoot to have on billboards. You don't want to just like, you know, from the camera phone, now you're trying to figure out how to take out the background and the sofa. Like, hey, cast and crew, did you guys take any pictures? You know?
So
for the marketing tip is have stills and have actual behind the scenes footage of your work so that you can use to actually market your film.
Love it. And what's your one festival circuit tip?
Show out, network. Like, I remember I was nominated at the ABFF, and listen, everybody knew I was coming. Okay, I had my van painted. It was like a 10-hour drive, and we are on our way to the ABFF. Like all of this stuff was on my van. I had business cards, I had pins, I had bags, I had QR codes. I came to network, okay? And it's so interesting because all of those relationships from 2018, I still have. And I, you know, just now started working with some of those people. You never know how it's going to all come together. And so my thing is network. Go to festivals, even if you haven't been nominated. Go to festivals, get you a notebook, and you write down people's names. You follow people, because it's so many important people at festivals, from sales agents to networks to executive producers. You don't know who you're going to bump into. But my biggest tip is, while you're at the festival, always have something that you can give that person that you're networking that they will remember you by. I don't care if it's a Capri Sun drink. They're going to remember you are the person that gave them a Capri Sun drink, so that when you send that email, you're like, hey, I'm the Capri Sun girl. You always want something that people will remember you by, because it is a lot of networking going on. It's a lot of different moving pieces at a festival. But if you can give whoever and everybody you're networking to something to make you stand out, they're going to remember who you are, even if you are passing out bubblegum.
You want to be memorable, and it's because again, everyone's meeting dozens and hundreds of people. So I like that. It's the relationship building, and you
It's the
make it sound
relationship
fun.
building. Yeah, and it's fun. You know, when they open the gum, they're like, oh my gosh, she gave me some gum. I needed this. You know, and it
Yeah.
may seem it just may seem like, but it's valuable, you know, and they will remember you by that. And to this day, everybody still remembers it. Like, oh, I remember when you showed up at the AVFF with all of these bags. I'm like, you gotta
And
remember
t-shirts, man, you made it sound
me.
like a
And
family
t-shirts.
reunion.
That's my entire crew. I had t-shirts made for us. I had everybody's name on it. Like, we came ready. I was ready to network. I did not play. And it's so funny because everybody now, like, if they find me, they're like, they may find me on Instagram now. Like, oh my God, I remember you from the ABFF with the van. I'm like, yep, that was
That's
me.
awesome. That is awesome. And congratulations on that too,
Thank
ABFF.
you.
Wow. Ooh, Michelle, this has been amazing. You've just taken us on a crash course of just so much valuable information for the indie space coming from your executive producer experience, a lot of different tasks that maybe people overlooked or weren't aware of that helps make any production possible. I just want to say thank you again. Do you have any parting wisdom to leave the people with overall?
Yes, my overall is do it. Like, shoot it. I don't care if you have to shoot it from your phone. I don't care if you have to do a pitch deck in Google Docs. By any means necessary. You know, you can't win if you're not in. You will be surprised at how many people have won from shooting something from their phone. You know, it is good to have an Arri camera or a Red camera, you know, these type of things, but anything is possible when you're passionate and you want it done. So regardless of any obstacles, shoot the script. Shoot it. I don't care if it's outside in a parking lot.
Yeah.
Shoot your script. Tell your story. It's so important that we tell our story. Someone is waiting. Our audience is waiting. So that's what I would leave with. And also, like, back to you and thanking you so much. Like, you know, it feels so good to have, you know, like-minded filmmakers that are in this space and want to see other filmmakers grow. And like you say, I'm doing my part. Everybody has a part. And when we realize that we win, like, nobody part is bigger than the other. We are all here to do our part for the greater purpose. And so I appreciate you. I have connected with so many people off of your podcast alone. I was so excited when I spoke to Spence. I was like, oh my God, I got my interview coming up. He was like, you're like, I'm like, I'm really geeked because it feels good to be in a space where, you know, people want to see filmmakers win. And this is why we do this. And so I thank you so much. I know it's late where you are, but it's appreciated for you just connecting and making sure you're still a part of this film space, and you're giving your time and your energy, and you don't have to, but you do. And I love that so much. So I'm so appreciative to be a part of this podcast. It was super amazing. And again, just thank you. You are really doing something phenomenal.
Wow, man. Trying to leave me speechless. I still got to do the outro. No, Michelle, thank you. Thank you so much. A shout out to you, Spence. Ricardo Spence, guys, that was a great interview with him out of the Bronx. That's who she's become friends with him now. And that's super dope. When I saw the collab on Instagram, I was like, hey, yo, they've connected. That's what I love. And you know, I'm happy to be able to be doing this from Africa, from Zanzibar, because it's just that, like we said at the top of the episode, we were talking about community and just outreach and just bringing people together, and it's what I love, and I'm so grateful, yes, to be able to do my part. And I thank you for sitting down to chat with me, and I'm so glad you're so hyped to for another opportunity to share your experience with folks. Really means a lot. I know it means the world to somebody new listening and listening right now. I was gonna say, guys, like she needs to write a book, but then I remembered she's got her website. So again, showrunher.com. josiahsvoice.com. It's also her handle on Instagram, Twitter, social media. She's got way more than what we just shared in this session. And she's building out stories and homework and inspiration and resources all the time, all the time. So get hooked up with her so as that your production can be a success. I don't care if it's just one slide from her stories. If all you needed was to figure out how to get a grant, if all you needed to do was figure out how to redesign your pitch deck, whatever. She's got a wealth of knowledge, and I'm just glad folks like her exist in our space, especially for us as Black and African American, you know, diaspora filmmakers just getting our stories out. I love it. So check her out. Get linked up. This has been great, Michelle. And guys, I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Subscribe to Josiah's Voice on Black Filmmaking wherever you get your podcasts. And I'll see you guys on the next one. See ya.
If you enjoyed that episode, I invite you to subscribe on your favorite listening app. To keep up with the show, you can follow me on Twitter at JosiahDOCX and on Instagram at Josiah's Voice Pod. And if you like my theme music, it's called Brewer B by Mateo. The link is in the description. Thanks again, and talk to you later.